Have you ever wondered how much space worry takes up in your mind? How much peace it steals before your day even begins? Most people wake up and instantly carry the weight of yesterday, the fear of tomorrow, and the pressure of everything in between, all before they even take their first breath of presence. We've been conditioned to believe that thinking more somehow means we're being responsible, that if we keep turning things over in our minds, maybe we'll find the answer. Maybe we'll finally feel better. But the truth is, overthinking doesn't solve the problem. It becomes the problem. It turns clarity into chaos. It turns moments into mental prisons. And the heart? It's no different. Pain doesn't always shout. Sometimes it whispers, through silence, through overgiving, through the tightness in your chest you can't quite explain. We carry emotional wounds, like invisible luggage, pretending we're fine while sinking deeper inside. But what if you didn't have to carry all of it? What if peace wasn't something to find, but something to return to? In this episode, we're not going to offer more noise, more answers, or more strategies. We're going to return to stillness, one thought at a time. Through the lens of Stoicism, we'll explore how to release the mental weight you were never meant to carry, how to care without losing yourself, and how to find the one thing worth holding on to when everything else feels uncertain, inner stillness. Let's begin. 1. Your mind is not a storage for worries. It's a tool for clarity. We treat the mind like a warehouse, a place where every fear, every loose end, every what-if gets shelved for later review. We pile on unanswered questions, imagined disasters, silent arguments, endless to-do lists, and we do it without realizing we're turning a tool for clarity into a trap of confusion. The human mind is not designed to carry every detail of life on its back. It was designed to process, to filter, to discern, not to endlessly store and replay everything that could go wrong. You've probably felt this before. You sit alone, maybe just for a moment, and instead of resting, your mind takes off. You think about what you should have said in that conversation last week. You wonder if they misunderstood your silence. You play out a dozen futures, none of them guaranteed. And all the while, your present moment slips away. Quiet, unnoticed, and unrecoverable. The Stoics, especially Epictetus, taught that the true danger isn't what happens to us. It's the meaning we assign to it. He said, "Men are disturbed not by things, but by the views which they take of things." And that view, that interpretation, happens in the mind. It's the lens we forget we're looking through. And when that lens is fogged up with fear, regret, or over-analysis, it distorts everything we see. The problem isn't thinking. The problem is mistaking thought for truth and worry for wisdom. But here's the truth. The mind is a tool, like a knife, like fire, like breath. When it's sharp and clear, it can cut through the noise. It can help you see your path, your values, your decisions with precision. But when it's dull from overuse, from worry, comparison, reactivity, it becomes dangerous. It starts turning inward, cutting you instead. What can you do? You start by observing. Don't judge your thoughts. Don't force them to stop. Just notice them. Ask yourself, is this thought useful? Is this thought mine, or was it given to me by someone else's fear, someone else's expectations? Does this thought bring me closer to clarity, or closer to panic? In that simple questioning, you reclaim your role as the thinker, not the thought. Another powerful exercise? Write. Take 5 minutes in the morning and empty your mind onto paper, not to fix anything, not to solve the world, but to clear the mental clutter. Think of it as mental housekeeping, a way to reset the space before your day begins. Because clarity doesn't come from holding more in your head. It comes from letting go of what doesn't belong there. And maybe most importantly, stop idolizing worry. We sometimes believe that if we worry enough, we're being responsible. That if we mentally suffer in advance, we're preparing ourselves for what might go wrong. But worry is not preparation. It's imagination used against you. It's energy spent on a future that may never come. True responsibility is presence. It's showing up fully, not spiraling mentally behind the scenes. Your mind can be your greatest ally or your biggest saboteur, but that depends on how you use it. So use it wisely, sharpen it with truth, empty it often. And remember, your peace doesn't come from thinking more. It comes from thinking clearly. 2. Most worries are just mismanaged attention. Worry often disguises itself as care. It pretends to be productive, helpful, even noble. You tell yourself, "I'm just being responsible," or "I'm preparing for the worst." But look closer. Most of the time, you're not preparing. You're spiraling. You're feeding a thought that doesn't serve you, watering a fear that only grows stronger in your mind. The real issue isn't always the problem you're thinking about. It's how you're relating to it. It's where your attention is going and what it's growing. You've probably heard the saying, "What you water grows." It applies not only to your goals and dreams, but to your fears, your doubts, your inner dialogue. When you constantly give your attention to worst-case scenarios, to hypothetical outcomes, to things you can't control, what do you think will happen? Your nervous system begins to treat imagination like reality. Your body tenses, your heart races. And suddenly, you're reacting to something that hasn't even happened. This is how mismanaged attention becomes emotional suffering. In the Stoic tradition, attention is a form of power. Marcus Aurelius constantly reminded himself to bring the mind back to the present moment. He wrote, "Nowhere can man find a quieter or more untroubled retreat than in his own soul." That kind of retreat only exists when your attention is aligned with what you can actually influence, not the shadows of what you can't. When your attention is scattered, your peace is too. You begin jumping between regrets of the past and fears of the future. You start to believe that everything needs to be solved, and solved right now. But not everything requires your mental energy. Some things need to be felt and released. Others need to be seen and left alone. And some, most actually, simply need to be ignored so your attention can return to what truly matters: your presence, your actions, your breath. Think about this. How many of your daily worries come from things that never even happen? How much of your mental energy is wasted preparing for pain that never arrives? The brain is wired for survival, not peace. If left unchecked, it will always find something to focus on that feels unsafe. It's not your fault, but it is your responsibility to train it otherwise. So, how do you take your attention back? First, you pause, you breathe, and you become the watcher of your thoughts, not the victim of them. You ask, "Is this thought about something I can change right now?" If not, you let it go, or at least you let it pass. Second, you practice redirecting. Instead of sitting in the loop, you move your body, you write something down, you engage in the present, not as a distraction, but as a reorientation. It's not escapism, it's realignment. And finally, you remind yourself that attention is your currency. Every moment you give it to fear, you take it away from peace. Every time you feed worry, you starve presence. And every time you allow your mind to drift toward imagined chaos, you drift further from clarity, composure, and control. The modern world is built to hijack your attention, news, noise, notifications, opinions. But your inner world doesn't need more input. It needs more intention, less scrolling, more stillness, less reaction, more reflection, less fear, more focus. Peace doesn't come from solving everything. It comes from managing your attention so well that what used to trigger you barely touches you anymore. 3. Overattachment to thought is a silent addiction. We don't often talk about thought as an addiction, but maybe we should. Not thinking itself, but the kind of overthinking that loops in circles, offers no resolution, and slowly drains your energy without giving anything back. The kind that creeps in when you're alone. The kind that feels important, but leaves you stuck. This is not reflection. This is mental noise dressed up as insight. And the more attached you are to your thoughts, the harder it becomes to hear your own truth underneath them. Most people never question the content of their mind. A thought appears, and it's accepted, absorbed, believed. But the mind isn't a perfect narrator. It's a storyteller, and sometimes those stories are outdated. Sometimes they were never yours to begin with. They're echoes of past pain, learned fears, borrowed doubts. And yet we keep returning to them, not because they're helpful, but because they're familiar. Because looping thoughts give the illusion of movement, when in reality, you're standing still. The Stoics taught that you are not your thoughts. You are the user of thought. Seneca warned, "We suffer more in imagination than in reality." And that line is more relevant now than ever, because the suffering created by overattachment to thought isn't always loud. It's subtle. It shows up as indecision, anxiety, self-doubt. It shows up as the inability to be present with a quiet moment, because your mind craves the chaos it has grown used to. Let's be honest, some people are addicted to their thoughts in the same way others are addicted to a screen or a substance. It becomes the place they go to escape the discomfort of simply being. But clarity, the kind the Stoics valued, doesn't come from thinking more. It comes from thinking less and listening more, from learning to trust not just the mind, but the stillness beneath it. So how do you break the addiction? Start by noticing it. Notice when your thoughts are looping, not solving. Ask yourself, is this a useful thought or just a familiar one? Then interrupt the pattern. Go for a walk, take a breath, say it out loud. I don't need to think about this right now. It may feel strange, but reclaiming your authority over thought begins with simple declarations like that. Another powerful step is building moments of intentional silence into your day, not to suppress thoughts, but to make space between them. Meditation isn't about controlling the mind. It's about realizing you aren't the mind. That behind the voice, there is awareness. Behind the noise, there is clarity. And finally, forgive yourself for looping. It doesn't mean you're broken. It means you're human. But being human also means you have the power to choose. To let thoughts pass like clouds instead of turning them into storms. To say, that thought isn't serving me anymore, and gently release it. You don't owe every thought your attention. You don't have to follow every mental breadcrumb to the end. Not everything in your mind is worth unpacking. Some thoughts are just noise. And your peace begins the moment you stop mistaking that noise for truth. 4. You're not your emotions. You're the one who observes them. There's a moment, quiet and often missed, when you feel a wave of emotion rising. Maybe it's anger tightening your chest. Maybe it's sadness softening your posture. Maybe it's fear stealing the air from your lungs. And in that split second, you face a choice. Do you become the emotion, or do you witness it? Most people never pause long enough to realize there's even a choice. They say, "I am angry," or "I am anxious," as if that feeling defines the totality of who they are. But that's not the truth. You are not your emotion. You are the one noticing it, experiencing it, witnessing its rise and fall. And once you learn to separate who you are from what you feel, that's when emotional freedom begins. Emotions are like weather patterns, unpredictable, intense, sometimes beautiful, sometimes brutal, but they always pass. The danger comes not from feeling them, but from attaching to them, from building your identity around them, from believing that because you feel unworthy, you are unworthy, because you feel fear, you are weak. But emotion is temporary. Who you are is much deeper than that, and the Stoics knew this. In the Discourses, Epictetus teaches that the things which disturb us are not external events, but the judgments we form about them, and that includes how we judge our own emotions. Anger is not the enemy. Sadness is not failure. Fear is not weakness. These are signals, not identities. They are data, not destiny. The Stoic response is not to suppress emotion. It's to stand apart from it and ask, "What is this feeling telling me? Is it guiding me or misleading me?" You can be compassionate and still disciplined. You can be aware of your emotions without being overwhelmed by them. Imagine for a moment that you are sitting beside a river and each emotion is a leaf floating by. Some are fast, some are slow, some stir the water more than others. But you are not the river. You are not the leaf. You are the one watching, steady, still, present. This kind of emotional clarity doesn't come naturally. It requires training. It requires practice. It means checking in with yourself before reacting, pausing before responding, creating space between the stimulus and your story about it. And yes, it takes courage, because most people are terrified of what they'll find in silence. But the truth is, silence doesn't magnify pain. It reveals it. And once you see it clearly, you can finally move through it, instead of around it. Start small. The next time a strong emotion arises, try this. Name it, feel it, and let it be. Don't try to fix it, analyze it, or resist it. Just notice. I feel anger rising. That alone is powerful, because the moment you name it, you create distance, and in that distance lives your power. You are not your anger. You are the awareness behind it. You are not your sadness. You are the stillness underneath. You are not your fear. You are the breath that remains long after the fear has passed. And that awareness is who you've always been. 5. Pain lies to you when it lasts. Too long. Pain has a voice, and when it stays too long, it begins to whisper lies so subtly you might start to believe them. It says, "This is forever." It says, "You'll never feel whole again." It says, "This is who you are now." And if you listen too long, pain doesn't just affect your emotions. It rewrites your identity. It narrows your vision, tightens your beliefs, and convinces you that your current state is your permanent state. But that's the great illusion. Pain is not the truth. Pain is not the whole picture. It's a chapter, not your story. We've all been there. Moments where sadness feels endless, where betrayal leaves an echo you can't silence, where grief clouds every thought like fog on the windshield of your life. And when that pain lingers, it can become a lens. One that distorts how you see the world and yourself. You start to expect pain. You start to doubt joy. You hesitate to hope, because hope feels like a setup. But that is the pain talking. That is not you. The Stoics understood suffering deeply, but they also understood perspective. They didn't aim to eliminate pain. They aimed to master their response to it. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself, "If you are distressed by anything external, the pain is not due to the thing itself, but to your estimate of it, and this you have the power to revoke at any moment." This is not about denying real pain. It's about reclaiming the power to define your experience, even in the middle of it. Pain isn't always loud. Sometimes it's subtle, like that tired heaviness you carry for no clear reason. Sometimes it becomes background noise you no longer notice, but it colors everything. That's when it's most dangerous. Because pain that lasts too long can trick you into adapting your life around it. You start shrinking. You make yourself smaller. You stop expecting good things. You lower your standards not because they were too high, but because you've been hurt too long. So how do you respond? First, acknowledge it. Denying pain only gives it more power. Speak it, write it, cry it out. But don't confuse feeling it with becoming it. There is a difference. Second, question it. Ask, is this the truth, or is this just pain talking? Is this belief I'm carrying, that I'm unlovable, broken, unworthy, actually real, or did I absorb it from a moment of hurt I never processed? You'd be surprised how many lies we carry simply because we never examined where they came from. And third, move. Emotion lives in the body, and sometimes the most healing thing you can do isn't to think your way out of pain, but to move through it. Walk, stretch, breathe deeply, create something. Let your body remind your mind that you are still alive, still capable, still becoming. Pain is a teacher, yes, but like all teachers, it's meant to visit, not live with you. It offers lessons, but it should never become your landlord. You are allowed to outgrow your wounds. You are allowed to rebuild. You are allowed to become something beyond what hurt you. So when pain lingers, don't argue with it, but don't obey it either. Recognize the voice, know its tricks, and answer with your own voice, one that says, "This may be where I am, but it's not where I end." 6. Emotional pain doesn't heal by overthinking, it heals by surrender. There is a kind of pain that can't be solved like a puzzle. It doesn't respond to logic or strategy or even time. It lingers not because you haven't thought about it enough, but because you've thought about it too much. You've replayed the conversation. You've analyzed every detail. You've imagined every alternate ending, but none of it brought peace. That's because emotional pain isn't healed through mental gymnastics. It's healed through surrender. And surrender doesn't mean defeat. It doesn't mean giving up or giving in. It means making the conscious choice to stop fighting what is, to stop demanding a different past, to stop forcing closure through thoughts that only tighten the knot. Surrender is saying, "This happened, I feel this, and I choose not to resist it anymore," because what you resist persists. What you allow begins to transform. Think about heartbreak, about loss, about disappointment. These are not problems to be fixed. They are wounds to be felt. You can't outthink your way to healing. You can't explain away an ache that was never meant to be explained. Some parts of the soul can't be reasoned with. They just want to be heard, held, and honored. And that's where most people go wrong. They try to solve their sadness. They try to fix their grief. But grief is not broken. It's a sacred process. It comes in waves, not timelines. It demands presence, not analysis. And the more you try to rush it, the more it hardens. The more you surrender to it, the more it softens. Seneca wrote, "What need is there to weep over parts of life? The whole of it calls for tears. There's wisdom in that, not as despair, but as perspective. Pain is part of life, not a failure of it. To feel deeply is not a weakness. It's proof that you're alive, that you loved, that something mattered to you. The goal is not to feel less, but to feel fully, without being consumed." So what does surrender look like in practice? It looks like sitting with your sadness without rushing to change the subject. It looks like letting yourself cry when you need to, without shame. It looks like taking a slow walk without trying to fix your mood. It looks like telling a friend, "I don't need advice. I just need you to sit with me." It looks like letting the heart speak, even when the mind doesn't understand. And most of all, surrender is about trust. Trust that you can handle this. Trust that you don't need to figure it all out to move forward. Trust that your body, your spirit, your quiet inner knowing, they all know how to heal, if you give them the space. You're not weak for feeling pain. You're not broken for not being over it yet. You're simply human and healing. So when your heart feels heavy and your mind starts spinning again, remember, peace will never come from more thinking. It will come the moment you let go of control and lean into the depth of what is. 7. Control is an illusion. Responsibility is not. Most of us grow up believing that if we just plan well enough, work hard enough, or say the right things at the right time, we can control what happens to us. We think control is safety, that if we hold on tightly, nothing will slip through our fingers. But life, real life, doesn't operate by our scripts. It surprises, it twists, it humbles. And eventually, we all come to a moment when something falls apart, despite all our best efforts. That's when the truth hits. Control is an illusion. You can't control other people's choices. You can't control how the world sees you. You can't control timing or outcomes or the weather in someone else's soul. You can't make someone stay. You can't force things to work. And trying to control what was never yours to command only leads to exhaustion, anxiety, and bitterness. But this isn't cause for despair. It's a doorway to freedom, because while you may not have control, you do have responsibility. And responsibility is where real power lives. You are responsible for how you show up. You are responsible for the energy you bring into a room. You are responsible for your choices, your effort, your attention, your attitude. And unlike control, which is rigid and fearful, responsibility is grounded and flexible. It doesn't demand that everything go your way. It simply asks that you stay aligned with your values, no matter what happens. This is a central idea in Stoicism. Epictetus said, "Some things are up to us, and some things are not." And your job as a rational human being is to know the difference and act accordingly. When you live from this clarity, you stop wasting time on what's out of your hands. You stop trying to manipulate outcomes. You stop obsessing over how others perceive you. Instead, you start focusing on what actually shapes your life, your actions, your principles, your response. Think of the ocean. You can't control its waves. You can't stop the wind. But you can learn how to sail. You can adjust your sails, strengthen your boat, and choose your direction. That's what responsibility looks like. It's not glamorous. It doesn't make headlines. But it builds character, quietly, consistently. The modern world pushes us toward control. Algorithms, metrics, outcomes. We're taught to measure everything, optimize everything, guarantee results. But the Stoic path teaches the opposite. Release what you can't govern. Double down on what you can. Trade the illusion of control for the strength of self-mastery. So the next time you feel overwhelmed, ask yourself, am I clinging to control or stepping into responsibility? One leads to frustration, the other leads to peace. And you'll know the difference by how heavy it feels. Control drains. Responsibility grounds. Let the world be what it is. Let people be who they are. Let life unfold in its chaotic, unpredictable beauty. Your job is not to force it into shape, but to meet it with strength, intention, and grace. And that is more than enough. 8. Detachment is not indifference. It's inner maturity. One of the most misunderstood ideas in self-development, and especially in Stoic philosophy, is detachment. People hear the word and assume it means apathy, coldness, shutting down your emotions, or disconnecting from others. But detachment is not about becoming numb. It's not about caring less. In fact, it's the opposite. Detachment is about learning how to care deeply, without falling apart. It's about loving with open hands, not clenched fists. It's about presence, not possession. At its core, detachment is a form of inner maturity. It says, I can care without controlling. I can love without losing myself. I can show up fully and still let go when it's time. This is not easy. It's one of the hardest things to practice, but it's also one of the most liberating. Think about how much pain comes from over-attachment. You over-attach to someone's opinion, and suddenly one criticism ruins your entire day. You over-attach to an outcome, and any deviation from it feels like failure. You over-attach to a role, a title, a relationship, and when it shifts or ends, you feel like your identity collapses with it. This is why the Stoics warned against confusing what is external with what is essential. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "Receive without pride, let go without attachment." He didn't say not to love. He didn't say not to try. He said, "Don't cling. Don't depend on what you don't control. Don't build your peace on shaky foundations." Detachment is not coldness, it's clarity. It's the ability to say, this matters to me deeply, but it doesn't define me. It's the inner strength to be with people, experiences, dreams, fully, and still remember who you are when they shift or leave, because everything in life is temporary. And if your happiness is tied to things that change, then so will your peace. So what does this look like in practice? It means you learn to hold space for joy and for sadness, for connection and for solitude, for hope and for reality. You stop chasing constant highs and start building steady ground. You don't panic when things end because you never confuse them with your worth. You allow people to be who they are, even when that means they walk away. And you meet every experience with gratitude, not fear. It's easy to live attached. It feels safer until it doesn't. Until the thing you held too tightly slips away and you're left broken because you poured your entire sense of self into something outside of you. Detachment protects your peace, not by blocking emotion, but by anchoring it. It teaches you how to stand firm, even when life moves. How to stay open, even when things change. How to stay kind, without being consumed. So no, detachment is not indifference. Indifference says, I don't care. Detachment says, I care deeply, and I release. And in that release, you find a new kind of freedom, the kind rooted not in outcomes, but in inner alignment. 9. Stillness is a choice. Not a circumstance. We tend to think of peace as something we have to find, somewhere out there, in the right environment, with the right people, after the right achievement, peace will appear. So we wait. We wait for the day when the noise quiets down, the pressure fades, the chaos settles. But that day never really comes, because the world doesn't slow down for anyone. And if you're always waiting for stillness to arrive from the outside, you'll be waiting forever. Stillness isn't found, it's created. It's not the absence of movement around you, it's the presence of clarity within you. And this is something the Stoics understood long before our modern age of distraction. They lived through wars, exile, political turmoil, yet they wrote about tranquility as if it were a place they could access at any moment. Because for them, it wasn't about silence outside, it was about sovereignty inside. When Marcus Aurelius wrote in his Meditations, "Nowhere can man find a quieter or more untroubled retreat than in his own soul," he wasn't romanticizing solitude. He was offering a strategy, a way to return to yourself, no matter what chaos surrounds you. But stillness doesn't happen by accident. It's a discipline. It's saying no when the world demands yes. It's stepping back when you feel the urge to react. It's pausing before responding, breathing before speaking, observing before absorbing. It's not retreating from life. It's engaging with life from a place of strength instead of reactivity. In our world today, noise is constant. Notifications, opinions, deadlines, advertisements. There's always something buzzing, flashing, asking for your mind. And every time you surrender to it, you're pulled further away from the center, from presence, from power. But stillness, the kind that's earned, is like an anchor. It doesn't stop the waves, but it keeps you grounded through them. And it doesn't require you to quit your job or move to a mountain or delete every app. It requires one thing: attention. Attention to how you speak to yourself. Attention to how you enter each moment. Attention to when you've been hijacked by urgency and forgot your peace in the process. Try this. The next time your day feels overwhelming, don't add more. Subtract. Step outside for 2 minutes. Put your phone down without checking it. Close your eyes and listen to your breath. Ask yourself, what do I actually need right now? Not what's urgent. Not what's expected, what's essential. This is how stillness begins, not with a perfect environment, but with a decision, a choice to protect your energy, a choice to slow your pace, a choice to listen inward, even when the world is screaming outward. Because here's the truth, the world might never be quiet, but you can be. 10. Anchor yourself in the present. It's the only place pain can't pretend to be. Forever. The present moment is quiet, almost too quiet for most of us. It doesn't offer the thrill of the future or the nostalgia of the past. It doesn't come with drama or memory or fantasy. That's why the mind rarely wants to stay there, because the present moment is real, and in its realness, it confronts us. It asks us to feel instead of fantasize, to be instead of analyze, to live instead of rehearse. But here's the strange gift of the present. It's the only place where pain loses its illusion of permanence. Think about it. When you're anxious, you're usually not in danger. You're imagining future pain. When you're ruminating, you're not reliving something. You're rehearsing past pain. But in the now, in this breath, this second, you're just here. You're alive. You're okay. Not because everything is perfect, but because everything is actual. And the mind can't spin stories in the face of what simply is. The Stoics lived in this truth. They trained their minds to return to what's present, not as an escape, but as alignment. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself constantly, "Confine yourself to the present." That wasn't just philosophical, it was practical. Because the mind is strongest when it's not pulled in 10 directions. When it's rooted in the moment, it becomes still. And in stillness, there's strength. But staying present doesn't come easily, especially when the pain feels recent or raw. The past can feel magnetic. You keep going back, thinking there's something there you missed, a detail you didn't process, a lesson you forgot to learn. But the past isn't a puzzle to solve. It's a place you've already been. And the future? It's a canvas. It hasn't even happened yet. It's not a threat, unless you let your imagination turn it into one. This is where practice comes in. Presence isn't a state. It's a discipline. You don't need hours of meditation. You need moments of choice, like when you're washing dishes and actually feel the water, like when you're walking outside and actually see the sky, like when you're with someone and actually listen to their words, not just wait for your turn to respond. The present moment is the only place where peace can land, because it doesn't land in memories. And it won't land in hypotheticals. It needs a space that's still enough to hold it. And when pain visits, because it will, you meet it here, not there. Not in the story, not in the echo, right here, where you can breathe into it, instead of run from it. Where you can observe it, instead of become it. Because in the present, pain has no story, no history, no future. It just is. And that's where you reclaim your power, by realizing you don't need to carry it into every moment that follows. Anchor yourself in the now. Not because the now is perfect, but because it's real. And real is where healing begins. 11. Don't let the temporary define the eternal. Emotions are intense. Experiences are overwhelming. But just because something feels like it will last forever doesn't mean it will. The storm always feels endless when you're standing in it. The heartbreak feels like it will echo for years. The failure feels like a stain you'll never clean off. But time is a teacher, and pain, no matter how sharp, is still temporary. What lasts is how you responded to it. What becomes eternal isn't the emotion. It's the character you built in the middle of it. This is a truth we often forget. We let fleeting emotions shape permanent identities. We say, because I felt shame, I am shameful. Because I was rejected, I must be unworthy. But no emotion, no matter how deep, has the right to define your worth. Emotions are weather. You are the landscape. They pass. You remain. The Stoics understood the danger of confusing feeling with being. They didn't ignore emotions. They observed them. They practiced stepping back, watching the emotional storm roll in without getting swept away. Seneca once said, "No man is more unhappy than he who never faces adversity, for he is not permitted to prove himself." In that sentence is the reminder that adversity is not meant to erase you, it's meant to reveal you. You will feel anger, you will feel grief, you will feel moments where everything you believed in breaks beneath your feet. But what matters is what you choose to build next. Do you let a temporary betrayal become a lifelong wall around your heart? Do you let a brief failure convince you to never try again? Or do you step back, breathe, and say, "This was part of the journey, not the definition of it"? We live in a culture obsessed with immediacy, snap judgments, quick reactions. We assign meaning in real time and rarely revisit it with clarity. But wisdom is slow. It lets time pass before declaring truth. It waits until the wave settles to see what the tide left behind. And it reminds us that we can feel something deeply and still know it's not the whole truth. So here's the challenge. The next time you're overwhelmed by a moment, stop. Ask yourself, Is this how I want to remember myself in 5 years? 10. Is this the response that aligns with the person I'm becoming? Or the pain I'm escaping? That question alone creates space, and in that space, you take your power back. Pain is temporary, shame is temporary, even joy is temporary, but the decisions you make in those emotional moments, they shape who you are becoming. You don't get to control what happens, but you always get to decide what it means to you. So when you're tempted to let a bad day define you, or a rough season write your entire story, pause, breathe, step back, and remember this. The eternal is built through what you choose to do when everything feels temporary. 12. Let go, not because you're weak, but because you're wise. There's a kind of strength the world doesn't always recognize, the strength it takes to release. We're taught that holding on means loyalty, that persistence means power, that letting go means you've given up. But sometimes, it takes more courage to walk away than to keep holding on, not because you don't care, but because you finally do, for yourself. Letting go isn't a defeat, it's a declaration. It says, I refuse to keep watering a dead plant. I refuse to keep fighting a battle that steals my peace. I refuse to carry a weight that was never mine to begin with. You've likely been told to stay strong, but strength isn't always about endurance. Sometimes it's about knowing when to stop enduring what's breaking you down. The Stoics were not interested in clinging to pain. They were interested in freedom, in clarity, in living a life where inner stillness mattered more than outer appearances. Epictetus wrote, "Freedom is the only worthy goal in life." But freedom isn't just political or external, it's emotional, and nothing robs you of your inner freedom faster than over-attachment to people, to expectations, to outcomes that are already gone. Letting go does not mean you didn't care. It doesn't erase the love, the time, the effort. It honors them, but it also honors you, your growth, your evolution, your need to keep moving forward. Sometimes you have to let go of people who once meant everything, simply because you've outgrown the version of yourself who needed them. This isn't bitterness, it's wisdom. It's knowing that not everything broken needs fixing, not every ending needs rewriting. Some things simply served their season. Some people were only meant to teach, not to stay. And some lessons are only fully understood when you finally release what you were clinging to the hardest. Still, it's hard, because the mind wants closure. It wants answers, explanations, final conversations. But healing doesn't always give you that. Healing gives you something better, the ability to move forward without them. To find peace, not in what they gave you, but in who you became through the experience. Letting go may look like silence, like not texting back, like saying no when you used to say yes, like waking up one day and realizing your peace matters more than being understood. And that's okay. You're not required to justify your growth to anyone. So ask yourself, what am I holding on to that no longer serves me? What belief, memory, or relationship am I clutching so tightly that it's cutting off circulation to my future? Then take a deep breath and trust that the space created by letting go is not empty. It's sacred. It's space for something better, something truer, something lighter. Let go. Not because you've given up, but because you're giving yourself a chance to live free again. 13. The one thing to hold on to, inner stillness. When the world feels unstable, when your plans fall apart, when people walk away, and even your own thoughts feel like strangers, what's left? What do you hold on to when nothing seems solid? The Stoics had an answer. It wasn't success. It wasn't praise. It wasn't certainty, comfort, or even control. It was inner stillness. Stillness is not the absence of movement. It's the presence of depth. It's not about having no problems. It's about not letting those problems own you. It's the quiet within you that remains calm, even when the world screams. And the most powerful part, that stillness isn't found in the future. It's not unlocked by achievement. It's not waiting at the end of a long journey. It's already there, within you, buried under layers of noise, fear, memory, and distraction. But it's always been there. Marcus Aurelius, a man who ruled an empire while writing nightly about life, death, and virtue, knew this. In his Meditations, he constantly reminded himself to return inward, not to retreat, but to anchor. Look well into yourself. There is a source of strength which will always spring up if you will always look there. In modern life, we confuse motion with progress. We run, hustle, chase, scroll, strive, believing that if we just keep moving, we'll find peace. But peace isn't in the movement. It's in the moment you pause. The moment you remember that you don't need to outrun your thoughts. You need to sit with them, breathe through them, let them come, let them go. Stillness doesn't mean you stop caring. It doesn't mean you avoid responsibility or live passively. It means you lead from calm, not chaos. It means you respond instead of react. It means when life throws something at you, such as rejection, disappointment, loss, you take a breath before you act. You check in with your values before you lash out. You return to yourself before you go chasing validation from outside. This isn't easy. Inner stillness is a practice, like building a muscle. Some days you'll feel deeply grounded, steady, clear, unshakable. Other days you'll get lost in the noise again. But every time you return, every time you choose presence over panic, breath over blame, awareness over autopilot, you get stronger. You train your nervous system to trust you. You build a home within yourself that nothing outside can take away. So if everything around you is uncertain, if you're tired of carrying things you were never meant to carry, if the world feels too loud, too fast, too much, come back here. To your breath, to your body, to this moment. Fix your posture. Breathe slower. Drop your shoulders. Become aware of the ground beneath you, the air around you, the presence within you. You can't always fix the world, but you can fix your stance. You can choose how you meet life. And that choice, repeated, refined, remembered, becomes your power. Hold on to that, because when everything else falls away, your stillness remains. Maybe this is the part we forget most, that we were never meant to carry everything. Not every fear, not every memory, not every weight the world throws at us. Some things are meant to be let go. Some emotions are meant to pass through, not take root. And some battles are meant to end the moment you realize your peace is worth more than your pride. The Stoics never promised a life without hardship. They didn't pretend the world would be gentle, but they believed, deeply, that how you meet the world, that's where your power lives. Not in controlling outcomes, but in mastering your response. Not in changing people, but in remaining unchanged by their chaos. Not in hardening yourself, but in standing still in the storm, fully alive, fully awake, fully grounded. So if today feels heavy, pause. If your mind is crowded, step back. If your heart is tired, listen. And then do what few are willing to do in this world of noise. Choose stillness. Choose clarity. Choose to release what is not yours to carry. and return to the only place peace has ever lived, within. Thank you for being here. If this episode gave you something to think about, a breath, a shift, a pause, share it with someone who might need that too. And if you're walking this path of reflection and growth, you're not alone. Until next time, stay grounded, stay clear, and above all, stay present.